We've seen a 7-game win streak this season, but now we're here in episode 134 of the British Birdland Breakdown, about to break down the latest loss in the team's 3-game losing streak. Let's get on with the show then. I'm Tom, and joined as ever by Callum to do that.
Good evening, Tom. And you join me in a mood where I'm thinking that I'm going to try and be as positive as I can about that loss this week. After having such a negative week last week, I'm going to come out here and I'm going to try and find the best elements of it that I can.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only way we can really go about things, isn't it? Because, you know, even though it was another loss, there is some positives that came out of it, including one really big one.
Yeah, and actually, I think, you know, that being said, we'll save all of our positives for after we go through the bad bits of the game, including the fact that we lost. But we've also actually got some news this week, including some news that we forgot about last week because we were so depressed at losing to the Lions.
Well, I mean, to be honest, it was a pretty depressing bit of news anyway. So, you know, why would we want to add to the misery by talking about this?
Yeah, indeed. And the news that we're talking about is that DeAndre Hopkins is in fact out for the regular season, which is why he was not there in the game against the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, really sad news that we've lost one of our biggest, if not the biggest, defensive weapon on the team outside of Kyler Murray.
And maybe James Conner, if you're feeling charitable. But yeah, you know, it's an interesting one because that was only a few weeks after we had him back after his break, you know, approximately the same time as Kyler Murray. But yeah, one of his knee ligaments went and he had to go in for a surgery last week, which means that the earliest that we could expect him back would be like the end of January, around about the time of the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it seems maybe a bit unlikely. Not unlikely that we won't get there because, you know, there's definitely the possibility that we might. But, you know, it's like, really, will he come back for that game? Or will he still be recovering from it? You know, it's not really something you can just bounce back up from, is it? You know, it takes quite a lot to get back.
I think that's the earliest he can get back. And, you know, as with all these things, the decisions will have to be kind of a holistic one, and it will involve like how much is he actually needed at that time. Like, let's just assume that the Cardinals get there. If the Cardinals get there, they'll have won at least 2 or 3 on the bounce at that point. And, you know, therefore, is he actually needed all that much? And would you rather sit him for one more game and get him back even more fresh for the Super Bowl? Is he planning on retiring at the end of this season, at which point he might as well go out there, you know, and kind of risk it a bit more? Or is he planning on coming back, and at which point you might say like, well, we'd rather have him healthy next year for the full year than, you know, for one game or two games.
And I can't see DeAndre Hopkins retiring anytime soon. He's only just turned 30, hasn't he? He's still young.
Yeah, he is. And he's also, you know, always looked like he's having fun when he's out on the field as well. You know, it's like, unlike Larry Fitzgerald's later years, when he looked like, I mean, he was always a bit like that, but when he looked like he was just out there for pure business reasons, you know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, sad to lose DeAndre Hopkins, but it means we've got opportunities for guys like Antoine Wesley to step up once again, like he did while Hopkins was out with his hamstring injury.
Yeah, indeed. And I think, you know, with the Cardinals having such a deep wide receiver roster, this is partially where we start looking to, you know, the future as well, and like seeing which guys are in the roster who could be sitting there, you know, moving up through the ranks as, you know, AJ Green and DeAndre Hopkins like lose speed and stuff like that as well.
But I mean, that's obviously something we'll address later on, you know, maybe after the season, you know, when we get looking towards like free agency, the draft, that sort of thing, because who doesn't love that part of the year?
Well, and I think as well, like, let's revisit this when the Cardinals, you know, are coming up to the NFC Championship game, you know, when there's a possibility of them coming back, because I think ultimately, as with, you know, as we had in 2015, it really needs to be right now a next man up mentality. It needs to be, we can't sit and say, oh, woe is me, DeAndre Hopkins is out. We've got to just be out there and start throwing balls to other receivers.
Yeah, I mean, there was another big bit of news as well that came out this week, and that was the Pro Bowl result after all the voting had closed and been counted and verified and all that blah.
Yeah, and the Cardinals had 4 players called up to the Pro Bowl, which is a pretty good turnout, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really argue with any of the 4, can you? Because there's Chandler Jones, Buda Baker, James Conner, and Kyler Murray all making it.
The only one that I'd argue with there would be potentially Chandler Jones, because I would say that his, you know, performance through the year has been like a little bit like spotty. You know, he's had some really, really great games, and he's had plenty of games when he's been very, very quiet as well. But you know, that being said, the games that he's had that have been great have been like historically great games, you know?
Well, yeah, obviously at the week one 5-sack game, didn't he? That's obviously still in people's memory. But it's like, it's not like he hasn't done anything the rest of the season, you know? He's had a few more sacks.
No, of course not. He had that incredible game against the Seahawks. He had a pretty good game against the Niners first time out. You know, that's not too bad at all.
And I mean, he is getting pressures on the quarterback, forcing him into mistakes and forcing incompletions, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, which is, you know, like when they're maybe not bringing up sacks and stuff, but he is bringing, you know, other things. He's and on top of that as well, like, don't forget that we lost JJ Watt early in the season. So all of a sudden, Chandler Jones has been, you know, the prime target for blocking as well. You're going to be designing blocking schemes around him.
Yeah, I mean, Buda Baker makes it for a fourth time as well in his short career. Can't really complain at that, can you, with just the way he plays each and every week?
I think, you know, obviously we as Cardinals fans see it, but I watched football with a neutral on Christmas Day, and he was sort of saying, like, wow, that Buda Baker guy is everywhere, you know? And I would argue as well that, come on to talk about it, but I would say that game was maybe, you know, not even him at his best, particularly.
Yeah, I mean, like, he still made a few mistakes here and there, but, you know, he just did Buda Baker things throughout the game, didn't he? You know, coming in on the blip. But we shouldn't get into too much of that because we've got... talk about him later on.
James Conner for sure deserves to be in the Pro Bowl this year. I mean, he was touchdown leader for a couple weeks there. He's been just a huge part of this Cardinals offense and really stepped up. And not just that, but I think, you know, when it comes to James Conner, I think the NFL fans, everyone really like the story of, you know, somebody who got their second bite at something and really, really took it in. And I think his story of having come off the Steelers where he was, you know, he had one all right season and then really, you know, messed it up. And then he's come to the Cardinals and really shone from there, has really captured people's imaginations.
Well, I mean, that one good season he had with the Steelers did bring him another Pro Bowl appearance. So this will be his second career Pro Bowl appearance.
Yeah. And I think it definitely well deserved this year. And finally, another player that deserves a Pro Bowl vote is Kyler Murray. And, you know, regardless of record, regardless of everything else, I think you, the one thing that you can't say about Kyler Murray is that he's not entertaining to watch.
I mean, there are people, like, disappointed or, you know, like, furious even that Matt Stafford didn't make it to the Pro Bowl instead of Kyler Murray.
I think Matt Stafford is now finally having a better season, you know, than Jared Goff was the year before. But, you know, I think Matt Stafford has also just moved into a team with, like, excellent offensive weapons, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, as well, like, the other two quarterbacks in the NFC are Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, so it's like there's only one spot anyway, so...
Exactly, you know. Yeah.
I mean, other than those four, the Cardinals did have 9 alternates named to the squad as well, and they'll obviously take the places of players who, like, either pull out, they play in the Super Bowl, or, you know, they get COVID, that sort of thing.
Or just injured or whatever, yeah. Zach Ertz, who I think would have been, you know, a reasonable candidate for actually getting voted in first time. Marcus Golden having a good season, you know. Max Garcia, which is a kind of a funny one, actually. Hopkins, Rodney Hudson, DJ Humphreys, Andy Lee, Byron Murphy, and Matt Prater all made the ballot as alternatives as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, granted, we hope that none of them will be playing in the game anyway, because, you know, they'll have something a bit more important to prepare for.
Yeah, they'll have a bigger date instead.
I mean, it is nice to see Cardinals getting some recognition, you know, after, you know, a successful season, to say, I would say.
Yeah, and I think as well, actually, like, this is better, I can't remember for sure, but I think this is better Pro Bowl recognition than we had last time we were had a winning season as well. So, you know, hopefully that's a combination of, like, better media attention, but also, like, more recognizable players and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got guys like Kyler Murray, you know, people seem to recognize him, you know, just because he's a short quarterback, even though,
you know, I think he's also, you know, he's properly becoming a face of the franchise rather than having, you know, even like when we had Carson Palmer, he was seen by the majority of people as, like, oh, he's just a journeyman QB who appears here and there. And, you know, with Kyler, it's like a young guy who got drafted in by the team and he's kind of nationally known. And, I, like, even if it is just for the reason of being short, at least that's something. And yeah, I think, you know, guys like Buda Baker making a name for themselves as well. But yeah, I think what, like 13 people, you know, going forward for that, that's pretty good all round.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like we say, hopefully they're not involved, but thankfully people have recognised their achievements so far this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I will say, going on some elements of the performance from Christmas, well, Boxing Day for us, it looked more likely that they would be involved in the Pro Bowl than ever this season. Then again, that we do have a lot of positives to talk about in our game recap of the Arizona Cardinals versus the Indianapolis Colts, where we lost 16-22.
I mean, that's like just a really odd scoreline just to begin with, isn't it, really? Like, how often really is these 22 points scored?
Yeah, and even 16 points is kind of a weird one as well, actually.
And yet it wasn't scorigami, because I think it's happened many times before.
Yeah, I think with the combo of having safety and our missed kicks rolling up to be the equivalent of, or rather the missed extra points rolling up to be the equivalent of just two field goals instead, that kind of messes it up a little bit like that. But yeah, indeed, another loss. And I suppose in a way, this is the easiest of the three games to lose.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things as well, like, you know, it was Christmas Day / Boxing Day for us. So it was like, you know, did it kind of ruin the day, or, you know?
Well, I'll tell you something. I was like pleasantly full and a little bit drunk sitting down to watch the game. And by the time it finished, I felt too full and hungover and not too excited about it, I gotta say. So that kind of, you know, sent me off to bed in not a great mood, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I did plan on watching, like, obviously try and get some sleep before the game, but then I saw Phoenix Suns were playing. Like at 10 o'clock, yeah, so I thought, yeah, may as well watch some basketball.
At least the Phoenix Suns are playing well.
Yeah, but they, like, you know, like the Cardinals, they did go on and lose that game. So, you know, it wasn't a good night for
Arizona sports.
Yeah, it wasn't a great night for Arizona sports, put it that way.
And yeah, I think in a lot of ways, you've sort of said it there that this is the third straight loss. And I think this is, you know, that's key to how this game feels. Because if you'd put this game in the middle of like a reasonable winning streak, like say we'd lost the previous, or we'd won the previous two games, never mind the record or anything like that, but if we won those two and then we come into this one and we lose it in the fashion that we did, we'd go, well, damn, that was annoying. We had a bunch of penalties. We had a bunch of this. We had a bunch of that. But we might not feel too bad about it. But coming into it after the back of the loss to the Lions and to the Rams as well, it's really bad, and especially now that we've lost the division lead as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we now trail to the Rams in that one, but I mean, we can still get it back provided we do win the final two games and they drop one of the two.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely, you know, it stings a lot more, I think, in this circumstance.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, you never want to really lose like three games in a row, do you? But like, especially when we come into this game and it was like the Indianapolis Colts were down, like, I think it was three starting offensive linemen, then they lost two more during the game. You know, they had other big players out due to COVID. Like, just hours before the game, it came out their linebacker Darius Leonard was out with COVID. So it was like, you know, maybe the Cardinals could take advantage there, but he just didn't.
I do think, in a way, like, with this game, I kind of spent probably most of the game thinking that the Cardinals had a chance to win it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It wasn't like the Colts ran away with it. Like, literally, they didn't run away with it because we kept Jonathan Taylor in check for most of it.
Although I gotta say, they did try. Like, was it the first play of the game and he went for like 30-something yards?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we are creeping into a sort of like positive territory here, but, you know, yeah, Jonathan Taylor didn't really do that much in the game. Like, thankfully, no. I did miss that first snap because my internet was playing up, so it was like, I didn't see it.
you didn't see it. It was pretty bad, but you know, you live and you learn, and you know, you can come back to fight from that. But I think after, you know, the drive that the Cardinals had and a missed kick, it was a bit of a kick in the teeth. And I did think, you know, when that happened, I was like, oh, we're in for a long night here. But you know, largely the Cardinals kept it in check, and I would say one of the single biggest factors throughout the whole game of them not being able to keep it in check or get further ahead when they were ahead was penalties.
Yeah, obviously, you know, like we sat through last year where they were a massive problem for the Cardinals, and, you know, the 2020 sort of, like, I don't know, is it like ill-discipline, I'd say? You know, it reared the ugly head once again.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, like, one of the big ones we're talking about is like offensive offsides. And I think, you know, if you're a starting NFL guard and you're getting caught offside three times and a half, that's a problem, you know. And it could be that we're still on, you know, different versions of the same problem with the snapping issues that we've had. But I don't think it is at this point, because it really was kind of across the whole squad.
Yeah, I mean, they had like eight penalties in the first half alone. And, you know, most of them were just silly ones, weren't they? Like you say, Josh Jones, he led the way with three false starts. We had the stupid roughing the passer call on Chandler Jones. He just decided to launch himself at Carson Wentz. Really dumb on his part.
That was a stupid one.
But I suppose the most egregious one was the defensive pass interference on Marco Wilson, who literally did not touch the receiver.
Yeah, I think as well, like that was off of an unforced error from the quarterback as well. Like it was an underthrown ball. And you know, I kind of agree with the commentary team on that part, where it's just a case of that's just a thing that's not really accounted for in the rules, is defensive backs going back to play the ball in that circumstance.
Well, I mean, the pass really was more closer to Marco Wilson than it was his own.
Yeah, it was. It was. And getting the DPI called on that was daft. And I was pretty convinced that it was going to get overturned, but there you go. But
then, of course, just to make matters worse, he went off with a shoulder injury, looked probably dislocated or something with the way he was holding it. Yeah,
you got to hope that he'll be back pretty soon, because Marco Wilson has been playing really well.
Well, I mean, we did try to sign a cornerback in replacement of him this past week. It happened today, I think it was. Bashir Breeland. But obviously, as he came to Arizona, apparently he tested positive for COVID. So now we have to wait until he... I know, it's just the way of the league, isn't it, at the moment? It's just like...
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But I think, I mean, ultimately, as much as we talk about, you know, that Marco Wilson one being a daft call from the refs, like ultimately, like the amount of flags that we were drawing that were, you know, proper flags, all these offsides, stupid pass interference, stupid rushing the passer, it really cost. You know, I think, as I said, eight flags in the first half, and you think, you know, we could have been going into the first half with, I mean, there's a whole bunch of points left on the field for another reason. But, you know, if you think those drives hadn't stalled out where they did, that's at least two more scoring chances.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things, like you say, just cost you the game, doesn't it? Like, throws the offense out of rhythm. Like, I mean, they did get a bit of rhythm going in this game, you know, unlike the game against the Lions.
They looked a bit better in general than they did in the game against the Lions. But, yeah, stuff like that's not helping. And, I mean, can we talk about the elephant in the room? Because... ultimately, you know, we left 7 points on the field purely from kicking as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've sang his praises quite a bit on this podcast, but not today for Matt Prater. You know, it was just a horrendous game from him.
And I think, you know, to some extent, he wasn't kicking in the optimal conditions, because Andy Lee wasn't holding for him, who's the usual holder. And he had the snapping problems as well, like long snapper is still... you know, still not the OG long snapper, which is two things that's adding up that's going to mess up your kicking mechanics. But and thirdly, I guess I'm saying a lot more in defense of Matt Prater than I thought I was going to. But the third one is that we left him with some pretty long attempts as well, which is pretty much on the offense for not getting closer. But that being said, that's two missed field goals, and was it one missed extra point or two?
It was the one extra point he missed. But
seven points left on the field.
Yeah, we did have our original long snapper back from injured reserve, so that was one thing. But then it was like, for the first half we had, I think it was Colt McCoy holding for him, and that's when they had the two misses. And then after the break, they decided to change to Ryan Winslow, the backup punter, and then he still missed the extra point or whatever it was, the kick he attempted.
It's really interesting, actually, because I was sort of seeing people talking about this, and it is odd, because basically nobody, until Andy Lee got injured, was taking any reps at all in practice at holding. And you'd think it would be interesting, or it would be worthwhile, to have somebody like, say, Christian Kirk come in and be a backup holder. You know, we know Christian Kirk's got the like skill and dexterity to catch the ball. And there's no reason he couldn't be taught, you know, to do that. And if you just had him practicing from the word boo to, you know, be in there and getting it set up and everything like that, then you wouldn't have this problem of, like, you know, people who maybe did it in college or high school or whatever, you know, but like didn't work with Matt Prater and get that rhythm and all of those mechanics down together.
I think it would be more likely you'd put a quarterback there though than a wide receiver, you know, just in case everything goes pear-shaped, then the quarterback can like do like a field goal sort of thing.
That's true, but I suppose also, like, I mean, Andy Lee's not a quarterback and he can throw it, and I would actually trust probably Christian Kirk with a clutch throw maybe more than Andy Lee, you know. But I agree, like putting Colt McCoy in there as well, I can see why that's reasonable, but like again, without the practice, you know, if you'd put Colt in there and let him practice it, actually Colt's probably the best guy because he wouldn't have been taking first team reps anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, and then I think one final negative we can talk about was Max Garcia's snapping, you know, talking about snapping and all that. Mm,
yeah, I would agree with that. It's definitely, and like, I think that's part of what put the whole team out of rhythm as well, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, too many times we've seen it where, like, Kyler Murray's, like, calling something at the line, and then the center just snaps the ball for some reason. It's like, Kyler's not set or ready at all, and yet there he is snapping the ball. It's like, what's going on?
And we had that, you know, like, in the end zone as well, a time when you should be particularly careful about that. They gave up 2 points.
Yeah, I mean, I saw people blaming Kyler Murray for that play, and it's like, you know, what would they rather? Kyler Murray just, like, ignores it and then gives up 7, or he just, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I mean, absolutely the best thing for him to do at that point is to attempt to get it out of there, you know, like, because worst comes to worst is that he takes a sack in the end zone and it's 2 points. Or, as you said, like, he just leaves it and hopes that it rolls out the back. But, you know, from what I was seeing, it probably wasn't gonna. And then he gives it up for 7.
Yeah, I think he could have probably kicked it out of bounds as well. But, like, again, that would be a flag on him for that. So that would cost
them. Yeah, exactly.
But I think it would still be 2 points for them anyway. So it would be a safety.
Well, I think that's the thing with safeties is, like, pretty much if you're going to commit a foul to avoid the safety, then it's going to be a safety anyway. That's like the way the rules are written.
And then, of course, that does lead to like the weird scoreline in the end, doesn't it? You know, 2 extra
points. It does, yeah. And that's the thing, you know, like, I think, again, we take away those 2 points for the safety because that was, I mean, bad snapping, everything, like, but in a way you could say that's bad luck. You take away the missed field goals from Andy Lee. In fact, you don't even need to take away the safety. You give Andy Lee the points for all of the field goals and stuff. We win the game. You take away a few of those flags, we score one more touchdown, we win the game. You know, for all that it felt like, especially going to bed disappointed on Christmas Day, this was a game that was inherently winnable right up until the last minute.
But yeah, absolutely. We could have won that game, we just didn't. You know, that's all you can really say about it, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's like, it comes down to the same thing, right? Of, you know, that you make that onside kick go a different way and you give Kyler the ball with 20 seconds left, it might make it work, you know. But I do think actually there's that can be a negative there as well. The 2 minute drills in the last couple of weeks have been a bit off. They're not really producing the way that you would expect them to.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, the last scoring drive that we put together, it was an effective drive, obviously, but at that point of the game, you want to be hurrying it up a bit, don't you? Not like taking these short passes here and there,
yeah,
like we were doing.
I do wonder how much of that is a case of having, like, you know, Hopkins out, because, you know, you're maybe taking these short passes as the reads, and like you would be hoping that your wide receiver one would be downfield trying to make some magic happen and get open. And, you know, maybe you could trust Hopkins to get down the side and get separation, but maybe AJ Green's just not, you know, he's like losing a step somewhere and he's not able to get the separation.
Should we move on to some positives though? Because, you know, there were some to talk about for the game.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we should open positives with our greatest fear going into the game being completely the opposite, which is that Jonathan Taylor was kept pretty quiet.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, he opened the game with a 40-plus yard scamper. Then I think he had like 60-odd the rest of the way on like 20-something carries. So he did a good job in keeping him quiet.
Yeah, for sure. I got to say, it's interesting because that's actually, I think that's only like the third or fourth 40 plus yard play that the Cardinals defense has let up all year. And I got to say, it felt like the harbinger of doom for me when I saw that happen. I was like, oh no, it's not going to be a good day. But kudos to possibly one of the weakest parts of the team in being able to close up that, you know, that run game as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, they were really good at gang tackling him in this one. Like, you know, anytime he had the ball, there was like at least three or four Cardinals just dragging him down to the ground. I mean, like, there was, like, he had that really good run at the first play. And then he had another one later in the game where, like, we had him in the backfield.
He had the second wind. Yeah.
I mean, that's just a great play on his part, isn't it? There's nothing to do about it.
I mean, that's the thing is, like, as much as it's the defense's job to stop the run, he's also just a really talented player. You know, he's like the leading scorer for a reason. I actually think in general, the Cardinals kept kind of small ball, as it were, at bay really well. Like, they kept runs at bay, and they kept any passes that were going into the box at bay as well. You know, it really was, I think, for me, when I was watching it, a lot of the plays that we gave up to the Colts were bigger passes. You know, it was like into the secondary, especially after, you know, we ended up with Marco Wilson getting injured as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's never a good sign, is it, when you're losing one of your starting cornerbacks and then you have to rely on someone like, I think it was either Antonio Hamilton or what's his name? Kevin Peterson.
I think they were both in at various points, but like both are a deep cut, you know?
It's just that time of the season, though, isn't it? You know, next man up, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it really is. But I mean, all round, I have to say it was a positive because I think that the defense did really well in bringing that in. And also, if you look at, you know, this Colts team and some of the score lines they've been able to put up, keeping them at 22 is pretty respectable.
It's just a shame we weren't able to manage it on the offensive side ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But no, I think, you know, defense did well. And like highlighting a couple of defensive players as well, Buda Baker did have, you know, big game for Buda. And I said at the top, like, I think it wasn't even the best game that he's had this season, but it was still like a nice standout for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he had a lot of tackles in this one. He was sent on the blitz a couple of times. I think he even got there once, didn't he, on Carson Wentz for quite a big lock.
I think that was him actually. He got right round and Carson was starting to like roll out a little bit.
And to top it all off, he did win the British Beard Gang Breakdown Player of the Game poll for this one.
Which I think is pretty fair, actually. Like, for somebody who was, you know, one of the names that you can really get behind from a game, you know?
I mean, I would disagree because of who I think should have won it. But he'll be our next positive that we talk about.
Yeah, sure. I kind of agree with you on that one as well. But to stay on Buda for a while, you know, he's really becoming... you know, and has been for a while, like a player that you can build that whole secondary around. And we talked last year a lot about his leadership skills in that you know, whole sort of set as well. But I think, you know, he's really like maturing into a guy who can do it all.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, he's definitely going to be one of those guys who's going to be on this defense for years and years to come, you can hope.
Yeah, oh, you really hope so. I think I hope that Cardinals front office do whatever they can to keep him and to keep him happy as well, because games like this are games, you know, like he's been so good in the secondary all season, and then to have him come in a game like this and play so well on the blitz and play so well and getting to that second level the way he did, and again keeping Jonathan Taylor quiet, he's worth whatever he asks for, really.
He's already got an extension though, hasn't he? So he's here for several more years anyway.
I think he's got two more years confirmed, and then there's options for more years after that. Well, in the meantime, we can move on to...
I was going to say, the last time I searched anything for Buda Baker was Buda Baker pregnant, but I mean, obviously he wasn't pregnant.
And did we ever discuss that in our news, that his little baby was healthy and very cute?
We didn't know because, you know, that's not really our sort of thing, is it? We're not into all the gushy stuff like that. We just want football.
Well, I mean, the gushy bit for me was the fact that he didn't have to miss a game, despite the fact, I remember him saying that at the start of the season, he was like, if it's football or you know, going to the birth of my child, I'll go to the birth of my child, which fair play to him.
Yeah.
And I mean, on the contract, yeah. What's the contract looking like?
On the contract front, he's a free agent in 2025. So,
it's 3 more years. Okay. Yeah.
Should they wish to do so, though, the Cardinals do have a potential out in 2022. Where they can lose just $13.3 million in cap space. Can't see them doing that, really, can they?
No, definitely not. Not after the way he's been playing just now. And I mean, another player who's been, you know, earning his stripes in this game is Chase Edmonds, who, you know, has kind of returned after actually probably a fairly lengthy injury absence by now. And, you know, came back and played really well, like he hadn't missed a beat.
I mean, he was robbed of the Player of the Game award, I personally think.
I think it wasn't that close either, unfortunately. At least it wasn't when I voted.
Yeah, I think he only got like 20-odd percent to the vote compared to 50, 60% for Buda Baker, so it's like, whatever.
I suppose it's hard to choose an offensive player when the offense was, you know, arguably one of the kind of the worst side of the ball, but it was hardly Chase's fault because he was playing really well in the rush and the pass game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it wasn't ideal that we had James Conner sit out this one with a heel injury. Hopefully he's back for the final two games and into the playoffs. Because, you know, then we've got both healthy, plus Kyler Murray healthy.
Yeah, we've been talking about wanting that 1-2 punch back for half a season now.
Well, I mean, it's technically a 1-2-3 punch, isn't it, when Kyler gets involved?
I suppose, yeah, that is true. But, yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to Chase Edmonds being back, you know, I think it would have been a real possibility to see him come back and really struggle. But unfortunately, he was able to come back. And again, as I said, like, not really miss a beat.
Yeah, I mean, he found the end zone for only the second time this season, which seems like a travesty, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially when you look at how well he was playing in our 7-game win streak at the start there. But as we talked about at the time, you know, if you're going to take the ball away from him the minute you get to the red zone and start giving all the carries to James Conner, of course he's not going to see the end zone. But a well-deserved touchdown, I think we can call this one.
Yeah, I mean, as well, we should mention, I think, as a positive, the longest play of Kyler Murray's, I think was it his season or his career so far? That 50-odd yard one that he had?
I think it was technically the season, although I'll need to look that up. But yeah, 50-odd yard run, like a real breakaway run that I thought for a minute was going to come back as well when I saw those flags come out. But thankfully, they weren't against Kyler.
Oh, yeah, I mean, like, I saw DJ Humphries, I think it was, on one of the blocks. It looked like he shoved the guy and, you know, like, you know how ticky-tacky and petty the refs can be in the
exactly.
game. Exactly. Like,
yeah.
You can easily throw a yellow flag there, but thankfully they didn't.
Which is, again, you know, I think that kind of thing is really good to get out there, because having that out there and kind of reminding, you know, upcoming opponents that, you have to always be ready for a Kyler Murray run. And that kind of starts taking away defenders who have to play spy, you know, and freeze up other players elsewhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, you know, and it definitely showed that his ankle's back to being healthy, I would say, because there was no ill effects after that.
Yeah, which is exactly what we want to see. It's a really encouraging sign going into it. So, but I thought you were about to, when you said that you were going to bring that up as a positive, I think ultimately the biggest positive to come out of this game is the fact that for the first time in like 4 years, the Cardinals have a playoff berth.
Since 2015, yes, the Cardinals make it through, even if it might be by default. Who knows?
Hey, those are the two sweetest words in the English language.
Exactly. But I mean, like, with a couple of results going our way, the Cardinals were able to book their spot in the NFL playoff. I think it was with the LA Rams winning, you know, thankfully. We can actually be happy they won a game.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems a weird thing to say, though, doesn't it? You know?
Oh, it always is. Like, I never, ever find it fun to watch division rivals win. But ultimately, you know, like, watching that result come in, and I was like, yes, okay, the Cardinals have a playoff spot booked. And, you know, even if that's like wild card, playoffs are playoffs, you know, that's one more chance to see Cardinals football than we would have seen the rest of the season. And I think the thing as well is, you know, once you're into the playoffs, anything can happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, people seem to forget that part. Like, the amount of negativity I've seen from people, you know, just because the Cardinals, you know, they've been on this 3-game losing streak, but, like, they've made it to the playoffs. People are, like, saying, well, they don't deserve that. It's like, how did they not deserve it when they've won 10 games this season?
I think that's the thing, though. Like, if you'd said, you know, if you started the year with, like, a 3-game losing streak and then brought it back to being, you know, 10-5, then it'd be a whole different story, wouldn't it? It'd be people going, like, the Cardinals are going to win it. They've got everything. But recency bias is just so huge.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously we did overperform in the first 7 games, you know, winning all 7 of them, but, you know, can't really complain at the team for doing that. You know?
No, exactly.
What would they rather lose 7 games in a row?
And it was always going to be a disappointment from then on in, you know, like there's no going up from, but I'm, you know, I'm quite happy with making the playoffs at all. And I think that is a really good outcome from the season, regardless of what happens in the playoffs. And on top of that, you know, as I said, anything can happen. You just need to put together actually a relatively short win streak of like 3 or 4 games, you know, like 2-3 games and you're in the big dance, 3-4 games and you win it all. You know, it's like, that's not a huge amount of a win streak.
Well, yeah, exactly. These sort of things are hard to keep going, aren't they? Like, you see around the league, you know, maybe teams like, at the moment, they've got Miami on a 7-game win streak. I think Kansas City on an 8-game win streak. They might not last into the playoffs. I mean, Miami might not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, but I got to say, I mean, like, we can review or preview the playoffs a bit more, you know, closer to time. We've still got 2 regular season games to play. But as far as, like, a season goes, getting into the playoffs full stop, that is like mission accomplished on the season, really, for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, at worst, I think we will probably be like the 5th seed, you know, given the fact that the teams, like, at the moment 6 and 7 in the playoff seed to like 8-win team, and I don't think either of them hold like any sort of head-to-head against us. So, you know, even if we lose these final 2, I think we would still say 5th seed, which means playing the 4th seed in the wild card round, which is, 4th seed is the team, whichever the division winners, has the worst record.
Yeah, which I think is actually still quite open at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably more likely going to be someone like Dallas or possibly LA.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we can actually, I think technically, yeah, with Dallas, at least we could help them on their way to being the 4th seed in our upcoming game, which we'll preview in a bit. But
can't forget Tampa Bay as well.
Tampa Bay too, actually, yeah. Our surprising record down there. But no, I think playoff bound, it's not a positive that came directly out of this game, but it's a positive that came out of, you know, the Cardinals' hard work throughout the season. Again, you don't get to 10-5 by accident, even if we are on a 3-game losing streak.
And I mean, it also does guarantee at least one more episode of the British Birdland Breakdown, so people have that to look forward to.
Bonus, bonus, bonus. January is getting busy.
I suppose there's nothing more really to talk about this game, is there? You know, we've got everything in the way onto Dallas now, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think we've succeeded in, you know, finding a little bit of wheat in this chaff and finding something to be positive about with it all, because really, I think, and something we didn't mention there is that Indianapolis are a good team. You know, at least, you know, when we were complaining about losing to the Lions, like, that's more understandable because the Lions are a bad team by every measure. Whereas, you know, the Colts are a good team, and I don't think that losing to them, and especially only giving up 22 points to such a powerful offense, I think those are good signs, ultimately.
Well, yeah, obviously I feel a lot better after this game than we did against the Detroit game. That's saying something.
Yeah. Well, that being said, I guess we should have a quick stop over at our usual fantasy football corner before we get on to talk about the Dallas game.
Well, yeah, obviously fantasy football coming up to the business end of the season now, especially in the Birdgang Bowl, where each of the 8 leagues will be competing in their league finals this weekend.
Of course, this is the first year with the Birdgang Bowl that there has been silverware up for grabs.
Well, I say silverware, it's more like ceramicware, I think, or glassware, I'm not decided yet.
The first ever Birdgang Bowl will be given out to the overall winner, but of course the overall winner needs to win one of the 8 league finals that are happening this week.
Yep, so in League 1 we've got Watching Me, Watching You versus Nuke Skywalker featuring Baby Yoda. League 2 Excellent. Is Kyle Lurker versus Kamara Chameleon. League 3, T-Mac versus Vance Joseph's Justice League. League 4, the Kyler Inside Me versus Buddha's Bakery.
League 5 has the Ambassadors of Khan versus Hernandez Hitmen. League 6 is Cliff Kingsbury's Barmy Army versus Kyler Biso Murray 21. League 7, What Me Whip, What Me Nene is playing Steve Kimes Head. And in the League 8, the Arizona Cardinals are playing Hate to CTE. So those are our 16 best teams from across the league, as it were, or across all the leagues.
It's a shame there's quite a few non-Cardinals names in there as well. Shameful.
It's always funny to see that. You can always tell the people who've Googled funny fantasy football name.
Yeah. I mean, it's not original, is it? You know, like, the amount of times you see the same thing in every league. But, you know.
To be fair, they're hard to come up with as well. But there you go. I mean, Obviously, Tom, you and I were nowhere near any of those games this year.
Oh, yeah, but you don't have to rub that in.
It's true, yeah. And the other one that we were nowhere near as well is in the Dynasty League. Darren is playing Dan for an all-D final. They're, you know, both extremely high-scoring teams in that league this year. So that's that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the two top scoring team. I mean, Darren could do the double, really, because, you know, he's in the Birdland Bowl final. He's in the Dynasty League final.
Yeah, he is, actually.
And he's also in the International Birdland Bowl final, where he's playing in Australia.
No way. That would be wild if he went for a big sweep.
Doing the treble,
well,
as it were.
Yeah, going for the treble. Yeah, there we go. I mean, I'll tell you something. I'm looking forward to not bothering to play any fantasy football pretty soon. I've had a horrible year.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the Dynasty League, you've got the second overall pick going into the draft, whereas I've got the fourth overall pick.
I guess that's what happens for having no Russell Wilson for much of the year and, you know, all sorts of problems, but there we go. Yeah, fantasy football nearly over for another year. Must be December.
It's the same with the weekly pick-ems as well, where we've only got 2 weeks of the regular season left to pick. Although, of course, they do carry on into the playoffs.
Yes, they do. But obviously, you know, fewer actual picks to deal with then. In week 16, you went 12-4, which is pretty reasonable, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, that gives me 162-77 record for the season, which is 68%.
Yeah, which is like definitely more than average, and probably I wonder where you are versus like the Vegas spread for that.
I don't know, it's a good question, but like I did have another good week in my, speaking of spread, the against the spread picks, where I think I'm about like 58% for the season, which, you know, anything above 50% is decent enough, I'd say. So that's profit.
Yeah, I could,
some description.
yeah I could give you that.
Not that
in the week, nah, but bit of fun. As for the week 17 picks, I think we're very much in agreement for a lot of those. I'll agree with you that Buffalo will beat Atlanta, Chicago will take the Giants, that Tennessee will beat Miami, although I do think that's an interesting, potentially close one. I agree with you that Indianapolis has it in them to take on the Raiders, that New England will beat Jacksonville, New Orleans will beat Carolina, that Tampa Bay will beat the Jets, because I will always, always pick against the Jets. Philadelphia, you've got to beat the Washington football team, and I was really on the fence about this, but I think I'm going to take Philly as well. Chargers will beat Denver. San Fran will beat Houston, Detroit will beat Seattle, Green Bay will beat Minnesota, and the world will continue to turn. And finally, in the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game, I was again on the fence about this, and I've sided with you for Pittsburgh, just because I think that the Cleveland implosion is slightly worse than the Pittsburgh implosion at the moment.
I mean, it's such a weird time to be picking these as well, because, you know, like every single day it's like so-and-so's on the COVID list, so-and-so's not going to be playing this game because they haven't got their vaccine or something like that. Since I've picked these ones, Indianapolis, they've ruled out Carson Wentz because he's got COVID, and then just as we're recording now, Tampa Bay have announced that Bruce Arians has tested positive for COVID, so that might change things. Ooh, as well.
I was going to say, I suspect that Todd Bowles will be able to take over, and I suspect that Todd Bowles can do the Jets one.
It wouldn't be Todd Bowles, though.
No, you're true. Yeah, you're right.
It would be another ex-Cardinal coach, Harold Goodwin.
Oh, that's a name I've not heard in a while.
Yeah, he's another one who's in Tampa Bay's band of merry men from Bruce Arians.
That's quite funny.
So keep the boys together.
Yeah, true. I mean, you say what you want about him, but he knows what coaching staff he wants, doesn't he? I'm having a look at the ones that I've got different to you, and so you're picking Cincinnati to beat Kansas City, and I think Kansas City can extend their win streak one more.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one, really, just because, like, the way Cincinnati are playing at the moment and the way...
I know. Both of them are extremely high-powered offenses. I just think that Cincinnati might be, like, more tired by, you know, 1 week of an insane performance versus Kansas City, who'd put up, you know, like, a steady performance week on week.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those weird ones. Like, I mean, it should be a fun game to watch on Red Zone while we wait for the main event, at least.
Yeah, definitely. definitely. And additionally, the other one that I disagree with you on is that you've got Baltimore to beat the Rams, whereas I think that the Rams could probably do that quite handily, unless you know a bit more COVID positivity than I do.
Yeah, I think I might have got that one wrong, actually. I think I may change that to the LA Rams just because Baltimore's in a shambles on the defense and just everywhere, really, with injuries, COVID, everything.
Yeah, they're just having a tough time of it. I do think if you put those two teams healthy in the best possible situations, I would agree that Baltimore would take it, but in the various states that they're in just now, I think the Rams have got that.
Well, of course, there's only one game we really care about this week, even though there's not really much riding on it for the Cardinals anymore.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, I suppose we could say that there could be potentially a first place in the division out of it, but the Cardinals are indeed heading off to Texas to play the Dallas Cowboys, and that's a game that's actually been flexed to the 9:25 slot, or preferred slot, on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it was originally a 6 p.m. game, this was, but he decided to move it to 9:25, and I believe it's now the so-called America's Game of the Week, which will mean, like, the best commentators, you know, more people in the country you'll watch it.
Yeah, more media coverage, and you know, I guess it makes sense with the Cowboys being America's team and all that sort of stuff. Plus, I do think that this has the potential to be a very, very entertaining game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're coming into the back of this on a really impressive Monday Night Football win, where they put up 56 points against Washington.
Unbelievable. I mean, the first thing that I saw about this game when I woke up, actually, was the fight that broke out on Washington's sideline. Did you see that?
I did, yeah. They were actually two teammates from Alabama as well. And then
they were college teammates. And yeah, I think when you get like 41 points put up on you in the first half, and they put out their, you know, second string and third string guys for the second half, and still put up, you know, 15, 16 points on you, you get something to be worried about there.
I mean, I think two of the touchdowns were on the defensive side of the ball, weren't they? Because they had the interception return, and they had the punt block return, which is like probably the most easiest punt block you'll ever see. Because it was literally
bizarre, wasn't it? But yeah, I mean, regardless, I think you got to say, like, that's obviously a huge performance on their part. And 56 points is not to be sniffed at.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the Dallas Cowboys this year are a really good team. There's no denying that, especially with the offense they've put together.
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, like, over the past couple of years, obviously, they've been kind of slowly building that up. But I think it's really coming into its own because, you know, for instance, even if you look at like CeeDee Lamb, we know, like, we were talking about him and really wanting him to come to the Cardinals in the draft a few years ago, and he's really developed into just an incredible wide receiver. And they've got, you know, you combine him with like a really good quarterback in Dak Prescott, and you know, a really good running back like Zeke. And, you know, all of a sudden you've got a team, at least offensively, that can do it all.
I mean, yeah, that's not even including Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup, who, you know, they literally stroll into any other team in the league as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's a stacked offense, names-wise. All guys, I think, that I've had in various fantasy teams this year. And I've seen them put up big numbers at it as well. So, you know, they're clearly going to be tough to defend.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they've got a really good defensive line as well, you know, some really good players on it.
That's just been a tradition at the Cowboys for years and years now, though, right? Is like just having this good offensive line, and they seem to constantly, I don't know whether it's like a real prioritization in coaching or conditioning, or just like, you know, a kind of tradition within the club when they're drafting and they're signing guys, they're like, no, the offensive line is more of a priority. But yeah, they've you know, they're going to be able to protect Dak. And also, I think Dak is not quite to the same level as Kyler Murray, but we know Dak can run as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's nowhere near the athlete that Kyler Murray is, but, you know, maybe he's a smarter quarterback. You know, he might be able to see defenses a bit better. But obviously, other than the fact that he's a bit taller than
that. I was going to say, he can see over his offensive line a bit better. But yeah, you know, definitely a guy who is able to use the weapons that he does have.
But I mean, it's not just the offense who were impressing in Dallas this year. You know, they've got some really good players They're really standing out on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Micah Parsons is having one hell of a rookie season, for one thing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think everyone seemed to assume he was coming in as like an inside linebacker, but over the past few weeks, he's been moving into outside linebacker, and he's now got 13 sacks on the season.
And I imagine he'd be wanting to, you know, I do think to some extent, given how much people celebrate when they get that, sacking Kyler is a bit of a crown jewel for some of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big test for Kyler Murray just to be able to get away from him, just like really for the sheer size and athleticism of the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the speed as well. He, like, did you ever see the tape? Like, for such a big guy, him running the 40. I've got no idea exactly what his time was, but it was fast.
Yeah, he's kind of like that Isaiah Simmons, I suppose. Just maybe, like I say, maybe with, you have a bit more of an idea of what to do with him, like we have with Simmons.
I would almost say that he's like a bigger Isaiah Simmons. So it's like, you know, like one notch up, whereas kind of we say like, okay, Isaiah Simmons, he's an inside linebacker and you can kind of drop him back a bit more and you can bring him forward a little bit, but he's going to play space really well and then he can rush really hard when you want him to. Whereas I would say Micah Parsons is like, you wouldn't want to drop him back. You would only want to rush him or have him take slightly less of a rush. You know, so he's definitely like as versatile, but like more towards the defensive end side than the like linebacker / you know, nickelback safety type of role.
Yeah, they also have the NFL's leading interceptions guy as well in Trayvon Diggs. I think he's got 11 now for the season.
That is true. And we have seen Kyler throw some absolute stinkers this season that have been intercepted. But, you know, I would hope that with a bit more established run game, maybe, that we might be able to kind of take a bit of the pressure off of him for that.
Yeah, and I mean, as well, like, he may lead the league in interceptions, but I think he's also giving up maybe, like, the most yards in the league as well, so it's not all good news with him.
I suppose you got to make a choice sometimes, right, about whether to play the player or play the ball, and if you make the wrong one at the wrong time, it's going to cost you.
And of course, one of the big storylines in this one is the fact that Kyler Murray is returning back to Texas once again.
Where he has never lost a game of football, I believe, right?
I don't think he's ever lost in the Dallas Cowboys Jerry Dome, or whatever you want to call it these days.
Yeah. AT&T Stadium, I believe it is officially, but yeah. Never lost in there, which is entertaining. You know, I do think these types of things can have an effect going into games. They can, you know, it can feel at home immediately.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things as well. Like, you know, if the more we want to see, this is like a really good game to like put everything right, isn't it? You know, as we head to the playoffs.
Yeah, big time. Because I think it's interesting because ultimately the Cowboys are a good team, and the Cowboys in run of form, you got to say that they would win the game, right? Because like, let's just look at the last week, although this kind of extends to the last 2-3 weeks as well. But looking at last week, the Cardinals lost a low scoring game against a pretty good team. They lost nonetheless with really struggling to put points up on the board. Whereas you look over at Dallas and they beat Washington, who can be a good team, let's call them that. They're maybe not as good overall as the Colts, but they beat them hard. And putting up 56 points, I think, regardless of your opponent, is a huge undertaking in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're still waiting for Cliff Kingsbury to break the 40-point barrier, let alone the 50-point barrier.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, and not just that, but then these are two teams as well who could be meeting again in like 2.5 weeks time or something for a playoff game.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on the seedings as we head to the playoffs, but there is the distinct possibility that we could end up, I think we'll definitely be back at this AT&T Stadium.
I think wherever we go, we play an away game as that sort of next one. But I think, you know, ultimately it's a game that I believe that the Cardinals can win. And I say that as a homer, for sure. And it's definitely like, If you go in and you try and predict this as a neutral, you're going to say the Cowboys will definitely win this. But I think, you know, should the Cardinals be able to right themselves here, they can not only win this game, but that can put them on the path to winning games in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, I mean, we do have one more regular season game coming up after this one, but, you know.
They do, yeah. This is where you'd want to start the turnaround, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, two good wins heading into the playoffs, you know, that would bring a lot of confidence to the team and, you know, hopefully silence some of the doubters that have appeared these past couple of weeks.
Exactly.
But
Exactly.
Or just the whole season, really, because, you know, Cliff Kingsbury shouldn't be an NFL.
Yeah. I mean, when we were 7-0 up, people were saying we should fire Cliff, but there you go. What do you reckon? Do you reckon the Cardinals can do it?
Well, I think they can, but I'm not sure by how much. So I'm going to say it's going to be like 30-27 to Arizona.
I think that's a pretty reasonable sort of score line there, because I don't think that if we beat the Cowboys, we're going to beat them by a low score. I think it's going to be somewhere in the region of, yeah, like 30, as you said. Maybe I think I'm going to go for 31 for the Cardinals and like 24 for the Cowboys, let's say.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was like 30-27 the opposite way around and Dallas win this one and we dropped four games in a row.
And I think it also wouldn't surprise me if it was in another way, because we've seen this a couple times this season when we've had like remarkably low scores for games that we thought were going to be huge. And it was like, you know, 16-12 or something like that.
I mean, we could also see both teams put up 40-odd points, who knows?
Exactly. One thing's for sure, I do think that this will be an entertaining game to watch.
Oh yeah, I mean, it is between two of the best teams in the NFC this year. So, you know, standard things to come in the playoffs, hopefully, with the Cardinals winning, hopefully.
And like, as you said, you know, I think this is the game to make your mark in. You know, this is the game to tell everyone what you're all about and that they should be afraid of you when you get to the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think that'll do it for this week's episode of the British Bird Gang Breakdown. So as always, if you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Bird Gang. If you're on Facebook, like us at facebook.com/British Bird Gang and join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Bird Gang. Buy British Bird Gang merch at britishbirdgang.tmall.com. And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, then of course, leave us a review wherever it is you get your podcast from. And don't forget to share it around, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah, leave us 5-star reviews and all that.
And of course, now we've got the playoffs to look forward to, which means you have extra episodes to look forward to, and means also a delay to the end of season awards, but I'm sure we'll be fine with that.
Yeah, I think if ever there was a good reason to delay those, that's a good one.
Let's just hope they're delayed like until February or something like that. You know,
yeah, who knows? I would quite like to give out end of season awards in February at some point. That would be good.
But until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you next week to break down the Cowboys game.